athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
With Alabama A&M offensive lineman Carson Vinson being taken by the Las Vegas Raiders in the fifth round of the NFL draft, that makes a total of seven players from HBCUs taken in the last six NFL drafts. We're going to discuss, because we got a lot to talk about today here on Box to Row. You've got the Knicks moving on past the Pistons to the next round against the Celtics. We're going to talk about that, preview that matchup as well. The Clippers force a Game 7 with the victory over the Nuggets. Game 7 going to take place in Denver on Saturday. We're going to discuss that as a matter of fact. Speaking of the National Football League draft, you've got prank phone calls taking place during the National Football League draft. We're going to talk about that as well. LeBron James and the LA Lakers out. What is the future of LeBron James and the LA Lakers? We're going to talk about that as a matter of fact as well. Fathers behaving badly in the NBA. Boy, we've got to talk about that also. And look, when you talk about the NHL, the Caps and the Hurricanes gonna get it on in the second round of the NHL playoffs. I'm excited about that because we're talking about my childhood, my boyhood team in the Washington Capitals against the team that I follow closely now, living here in Raleigh, the Carolina Hurricanes. So you've got that as well. But we're going to start with the passing of Dr. Dick Barnett. Dr. Dick Barnett passed away on Sunday. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Barnett family. And Dick Barnett, or Dr. Dick Barnett, won two NBA championships with the New York Knicks. But he had, and he was inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame in 2024. I thought he should have been inducted a while before that. We had a chance to have Dr. Dick Barnett on this program back in 2017, and what an honor it was to have him on the program again, part of two Knicks championships, but also three straight NAIA national championships with the Tennessee State basketball team, as it was known back then as Tennessee A&I, but three straight national championships as part of the Tennessee State Tigers, went on to be drafted in the first round of the NBA draft by the Syracuse Nationals. And as a matter of fact, going back to his days at what is now known as Tennessee State, back then was known as Tennessee A&I, was coached by the legendary John McClendon. Now, we know John McClendon. I think we know John McClendon a lot more from his days, really, in the CIAA. I think that we know him more from his days in the CIAA, most notably with North Carolina Central, because, you know, he coached a couple of, I mean, John McClendon coached a couple of legends. That's the thing about it. And of course, not only at North Carolina Central, but also his days at Hampton. But we recognize him more for his days at North Carolina Central. Had some great basketball teams. Was the head coach as part of that secret game between North Carolina Central and Duke. Coached the great Sam Jones at North Carolina Central. At that time was known as North Carolina College. And but John McClendon was Dick Barnett's coach for those three NAIA national championships for Tennessee A&I, of course, now known as Tennessee State, 1957, 1958, 1959. And then what do you know? After Dick Barnett was drafted by the Syracuse Nationals, he became a member of the Cleveland Pipers. And wouldn't you know, his head coach with the Cleveland Pipers, the one and only John McClendon. So Dr. Dick Barnett went on to have a very good career in the NBA, won two NBA championships with the New York Knicks, finally got his recognition. Because remember, this is the thing you have to remember about the Naismith Hall of Fame, because you don't have, see, you have a College Basketball Hall of Fame, and then you have a Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, but you don't have a necessarily a Pro Basketball Hall of Fame or an NBA Hall of Fame, because the Naismith Hall of Fame encompasses what you did at not only the pro level, because it's not just the NBA, but it's the pro level, but also college and in some respects high school. I think with the high school piece, it's more about coaches and what great coaches have done, a la Morgan Wooten in his legendary career at DeMatha. So when you combine what Dr. Dick Barnett did in the NBA, professional basketball, and then what he was able to do in college, three straight national championships, three straight All-Americans, by the way, little AP All-Americas, what they called it back in the day. And remember, the other thing you got to remember is this. Those NAIA championships, and we think of NAIA differently today, but NAIA, it, from a historical perspective, has a lot of meaning, because not only was NAIA relatively big time back then, we know the NCAA was big, you had the bigger schools and all of that, but NAIA was significant back then, not more so from an HBCU perspective. Why? Because HBCUs were not allowed in the NCAA. And HBCUs participated in the NAIA. And as we know, there were some great players that played at HBCUs, played at NAIA. And while NAIA is still around, it was very extremely, extremely significant and important for HBCUs going back in the day. So again, Dick Barnett, the great Dr. Dick Barnett, passing away on Sunday. Thoughts and prayers with the Barnett family, because Dr. Dick Barnett, a part of this program back in 2017. So let's talk a little bit about fathers behaving badly, right? Like, you had a situation where the Pacers, and we knew this was going to happen when Damian Lillard on Sunday went down with that Achilles injury. And I thought that the Bucks could have an opportunity coming into that series if Damian Lillard could play. And look, they had it was 2-1. The series was 2-1 at one point. And you look on Sunday and Lillard goes down, and that's pretty much the series. Now, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the rest of the Bucks gave it all that they could give it, but it just wasn't going to happen. Okay. And Giannis, whether Giannis will be back in Milwaukee next year, definitely is, I mean, that is a real possibility, because as much as if you go back after the Bucks won the championship and there was all that talk, because see what happens, and I'm going to talk about fathers behaving badly, but what happens is the small markets get so much disrespect, right? And sometimes when you draft players, you have a small window to try and make something happen before a player goes on to a bigger market, because that's just where we are in not only the NBA, but in society. Everything's got to be big, 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 right? So, but Giannis sort of debunked that notion for a couple of reasons. A, the Bucks won the championship in 2021. He said, I am staying here in Milwaukee and not going to a larger market because of the nucleus of what the Bucks had. It didn't work out. And even with the Damian Lillard trade, ultimately did not work out. Now you've got a situation where there's a real possibility, because Giannis has said things from time to time. And look, the Bucks are going to have to make a decision, because the bottom line is that he is a free agent after next season. So you want to try to get something back for him if you know he's not going to re-sign. We know he's still in, he's in the prime of his career. He's going to be, you know, barring injury, one of the top five players in the league next year. And even the year after that, even though he's getting a little bit older, he's still a superstar basketball player. That, all that said, so after the Bucks lose game six, Tyrese Halliburton's father, who I guess didn't have a pass. I mean, he was sort of on the baseline, I guess, in the front row. I'm not clear as to whether I wouldn't assume. I mean, if he had a pass, it wasn't a media pass, right? Was on the court, and he was chastising Giannis, right? And Giannis didn't take too well to that. Of course not. He just gave it his all. It's a game the Bucks should have won. They were up seven with inside of a minute remaining in overtime and couldn't close it out. Extremely frustrated, and he got all, meaning Tyrese Halliburton's father, all up in Giannis's face, and Giannis got right back in his face. And, you know, I mean, we just can't have this, right? And now Halliburton's father will not be part of the series moving forward. He won't be there, and we just can't have this kind of stuff, right? Like, fathers, relax. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. You know, you're happy for your son, and it's great. But that doesn't mean you have to get in another player's, the opponent's player's face. If anybody's face you wanted to get into, it would have been Damian Lillard, because of all that sort of trash talking that happened. Fathers, we got to stop this, right? Be happy for your son. It's all good. Look, I don't know how I would be as a father. I don't think I would be this way if my kid was playing in the league. I wouldn't be that way. You know what I mean? Like, I just know my personality. You can never say what you would be, not whatever. I wouldn't be that way. That's just not my personality. It's my personality to get hype, but not to get in another opponent's face. So we got to stop that. And the league at least Halliburton will not be there for those game. So look, we've got plenty more to come. We've got Luka talk, LA Lakers talk, and still to come here on Box to Row, Bethune-Cookman head baseball coach Jonathan Hernandez is going to join us. Keep it locked.
Have you ever met a single person in your life that enjoys paying taxes? No, no one does. If you can't sleep at night because you have a huge problem with the IRS, I've got some free advice for you. This service is strictly limited to individuals that owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes. And if you qualify, we can guarantee that you won't be writing a big fat check to the IRS, or our services cost you nothing. The first 100 people that call today will get a free tax consultation worth $500. Stop worrying about your IRS problem. We can help you, we promise. Call the tax doctor right now. I mean right now, to learn more.
800-245-3052. 800-245-3052. 800-245-3052. That's 800-245-3052.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Jason Jordan.
Look, man, look, I was an Eagles fan long before I lived in Philly. I was like, if I went to school in New York, I was never going to graduate. So I was like, perfect. I landed in Philly. I've been an Eagles fan for years at that point. Philly fans are crazy. That's just reality. You just got to accept that. Philly's a whole other level. And you know what? We don't care. We're good with it. We know it. If you catch any one of us one-to-one, super good people, the best people, shirt off the back, you know, help you out in any way possible. You catch us on game day, everybody catching hands. Everybody getting talked about. Everybody's getting bad-mouthed. It's rough. I know.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to
Box
Row.
To Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Very well deserved that Salt and Pepper got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I always thought, even the last several years, I thought that Salt and Pepper was a rock and roll, should have been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because you're talking about in the 80s, the mid 80s in particular, this group that was so sensational, Shake Your Thing, as you hear right there, but you look at Push It, you look at My Mic Sounds Nice, I'll Take Your Man. I mean, all of those different songs, and then what Salt and Pepper was able to do throughout the course of their careers. I just thought that this is a group that belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they, in fact, did get in. Still to come here on the program, Jonathan Hernandez, the head baseball coach of Bethune-Cookman, going to join us here on the program. Also, still to come, we're going to talk some LeBron James and the Lakers and his future, and then Luka Doncic as well. I want to go back to last week's NFL draft for a couple of different reasons. Number one, Shedeur Sanders and him falling, right? It was one thing not to get drafted in the first round, but after that, and this is the thing, like, when the fourth round on Saturday, when the fourth round came and went and Shedeur Sanders did not get drafted, I said, he's not going to get drafted. The league is sending a message. Now, how the league is sending a message, whether it was collusion or whatever the case may be, I don't know if it was that deep, but the league was clearly sending a message from a number of different reasons. Number one, and like we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Jordan Reed in terms of, okay, we were at a situation where Shedeur Sanders after the season was going to be the number one pick. Then it was he and Cam Ward a toss-up. Then it became Cam Ward. Then it became Shedeur Sanders maybe dropping to 9 to the Saints. Then it became Shedeur Sanders dropping to the Steelers. And it was so crazy. Like I said last week, when the Giants moved up in the first round, I said, this is where they're going to take Shedeur Sanders, and they didn't. And I don't blame the Giants per se. The Giants got Jaxson Dart because then we also heard that Jaxson Dart could be also taken before Shedeur Sanders. And you've got your quarterback. If you're the Giants, you've got your quarterback at least for next year in Russell Wilson. Maybe wasn't a great season in Pittsburgh, but it wasn't an awful season either. I think down the stretch is where it hurt the Steelers. His play or not really stepping up hurt, but I still think Russell Wilson's got at least another year left in the tank. And if you're the Giants, you heard some rumblings that specific to the Giants, that Shedeur Sanders did not, Brian Daboll did not like the meeting that he and the Giants had with Shedeur Sanders. So they passed. Because this is the thing about the draft. There are only 32 teams. There were maybe three. If you look at the Browns, the Giants, and, of course, the Titans. But the Titans had the number one pick and made it known. We knew pretty much it was going to be Cam Ward. You had some other teams that needed quarterbacks. I mean, for the future, the Saints, maybe the Raiders looking forward, perhaps. But, I mean, some other teams. But really, it was two teams in particular, if you looked at it, that really, really needed a quarterback. So it wasn't like, and you only had 32 teams. And the draft is such that pretty much your first round and then the subsequent rounds are going, it's the same order unless you have some kind of trade, which we did have trade, so it kind of got out of order a little bit. But it wasn't like you had, you know, 50 teams and none of the teams. You had 32 teams, and the order pretty much remained the same. So if he wasn't drafted in the first round, the likelihood that he was going to be drafted second, third round diminished, and then fourth round. He ultimately did get drafted in the fifth round by the Browns. I thought what was telling was a couple of different things. A, the quarterbacks that went before him. Okay, so we knew it was going to be Cam Ward. There was, you know, Jackson Dart, a lot had come out about him in terms of, okay, he could be a guy drafted before or Shedeur Sanders, and that did happen. But then Tyler Shuck was drafted out of Louisville. He went to the Saints, who needed a quarterback, not as much as maybe in particular the Browns, because if you think Joe Flacco is going to be the quarterback, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later on, if you think he's going to be your guy for the duration of the season, then you're sadly mistaken, and we'll talk about that. Hadn't heard much about Tyler Shuck out of Louisville, but he was taken by the Saints, and the Saints needed a quarterback. And then Jalen Milroe, who has some upside, particularly as a guy that has the legs, was taken by the Seahawks, who is another team that in 2025 doesn't necessarily need a quarterback, but perhaps moving forward does. And then Dillon Gabriel out of Oregon. Like, you had Dillon Gabriel, Jalen Milroe, and Tyler Shuck that were taken before Shedeur Sanders. And when that happened, you already knew that it was something where the league decided, and when I say the league, I don't mean the league office, I mean the teams collectively decided, and wait, maybe with not necessarily communicating. And I thought the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter, had a brilliant take on why Shedeur Sanders was not drafted. Now, you can, in this was on his, he mentioned this, it was on a podcast that he did, and he mentioned why. And I thought it was brilliant, and I took a lot away from that, and I would invite you to go check that out. Again, Chris Carter's thoughts on Shedeur Sanders and why he was not drafted until the fifth round. The other thing was, and you look at him not being drafted, and you say, okay, well, what happened? And then why was he drafted? Okay. Andrew Berry, the Browns general manager, pretty much, I mean, what I took away, and again, I would invite you to listen to what Browns general manager Andrew Berry had to say about drafting Shedeur Sanders. But in essence, to me, what I took away from his comments were this, that he basically used the term, I mean, the value add was so great, basically is what he said, that the Browns could not pass up the opportunity to draft Shedeur Sanders. In other words, nobody wanted to give Shedeur Sanders first-round money. Okay, nobody wanted, and beyond that, to me, it doesn't matter. If you're not getting first round money, it doesn't, yes, second round money is better than fifth round money, but if you're not getting first round money, then it doesn't really matter, okay? It doesn't really matter. So Andrew Berry says, hey, he was there, the skill set he brings for the value at the pick, we're not going to have to pay him a whole lot of money. Let's go ahead and draft him. And that's what the Browns did. Because let's look at it from this perspective also. While I figure that it's going to be your quarterback's going to be Joe Flacco. He's going to start the season. He's going to be the starter, I think, to start the season. He's a veteran. He's got a lot of experience. What did we see from Joe Flacco 2 years ago from the Browns? Came in for an injured Deshaun Watson, did admirably, came into the playoffs and stunk the joint up, right? And that's what you're going to get from Joe Flacco. He's going to be a guy who's going to give you some spots. He's a backup quarterback at this point. So I've got to know that Gabriel's not going to be the guy moving forward. Okay, Kenny Pickett, we already know, we've already seen enough from Kenny Pickett to know he's not going to be the guy moving forward. Okay, Deshaun Watson is not going to probably, not going to play next year, probably. Right, so Shedeur Sanders at some point with his skill set is going to start. Now, I get it. You look at the National Football League, and I think also that the Sanders overplayed their hand when you're talking about we're going to pull Deion, talking about we're going to pull in Eli and all of these things. I think that rubbed a lot of teams the wrong way. And then Shedeur mentioned as much that, hey, I could have been better in this process. So I think all of those things combined led to Shedeur Sanders being drafted in the fifth round by the Browns, who already had four quarterbacks. But guess what? That means absolutely nothing, because if you got Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and Dylan Gabriel in front of you, you've got a chance to be the starter. Now, the question is, will he get a fair shake, a fair chance at being the starter? That is the ultimate question. Your thoughts, you can hit me up via Twitter at DWare1 or my personal Twitter account at DWare1. Follow me while you're there. Up next here on Box to Row, we're talking with Bethune-Cookman head baseball coach Jonathan Hernandez.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Hey, Patrick, right here. This being your fifth Super Bowl, what do you remember most about this whole process with respect to the first Super Bowl? And when I say the whole process, I mean the preparation, not only for the game, but the media and all of that, as opposed to now. How do you kind of compare that? Is it still kind of fun for you?
Yeah, it's still fun. I mean, every Super Bowl is its own experience. But I think more than anything, it's just preparing, because you know the process. You know what it takes throughout the week, and it gives you more experience and more calm, where you're not worried and you just continue to work to be the best version of yourself you can be and learn from your previous Super Bowls, and hopefully you can play even better in the game when you get out there on Sunday.
Ron Washington, the manager of the Los Angeles Angels, you're old school. So you've instituted this deal where the players are not allowed to have cell phones in the locker room.
Well, you got a young group and you're just trying to get some cohesiveness going on. What does goes on the inside of that clubhouse is our sanctuary. I really don't want to have a whole lot to say about that, because it's out there and it's out there improperly. I'm going to leave that at that. I don't want to talk about that.
I got you. But I like it. I like it, Ron. I like it.
I appreciate that. That's because you have a sane mind.
Box to Row live on Radio Row. We're here at Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And I'm going to tell you what, we've got a very special guest, right? He was coming over here to talk to us, right? Everybody wanted a piece of him. And now we're able to talk with him. He is the one and only Drew Brees.
Just hanging out, having a good time, enjoying Media Row. Enjoying the city.
Yeah.
You having a good time?
I'm having a great time. 15 years ago today, the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Man, that was a pretty epic time. It was a pretty special time. You know, that was an incredible journey, that 2009 season. Just the whole experience was unbelievable. It was surreal, and the city deserved it. The fan base deserved it. Not a dry eye in the house. It was unbelievable.
Kelvin Sampson, the head men's basketball coach at Houston.
Being raised in Pembroke and the Lumbee Nation was always a badge of honor. But getting the eagle feather is a sign of achievement and respect, and I think how you treat other people. Never forgetting where you came from. I grew up in a time when there was segregation. My dad taught and coached in an all-Indian conference. I mean, coming from that area, I learned a lot of life lessons, but getting the eagle feather is a tremendous honor. But you know right away, it's something you share with a lot of other people.
It was Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, and it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Dave Roberts, manager of the LA Dodgers, to be person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers, what does that mean to you?
There's not many of us in baseball to do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, what HBCUs mean to people, you know, and having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, you know what I'm saying, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent, and often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light, and people want to feel like they want to be here, and so putting it on the national stage is really big. You know, most of the time these kids don't get televised games, you know what I'm saying, so be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, you know what I'm saying? And getting, you know, the NBA, you know, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully like build this thing bigger.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip hop. And it's giving me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them. And I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
Kevin Hart joins us here.
Right now, I'm on cloud nine. This is the time where I'm in demand, so you make the best of it. You pick great projects, you get behind them, and you put them out. And the goal is to keep them coming. So that's making sure that you're in control of your destiny. And right now, I am.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Welcome back to Box to Row. Thank you for making the program a part of your day. And on the line, as a matter of fact, we're joined by a gentleman. He's in his sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman. The Wildcats are 26-19 on the season. A weekend series, an important weekend series at home against Alabama State. Again, Jonathan Hernandez, his sixth season as the head baseball coach of the Wildcats, joining us here on Box to Row. Coach Hernandez, welcome back to the program. It's good to have you.
Appreciate it. You know, anytime we get together and talk, it seems like we're doing some good things. So, you know, once again, I thank you for the opportunity for having me on and speaking about our baseball program. And like you alluded to, just an important series against Alabama State this upcoming weekend here in Daytona.
Yep, first place is on the line. You're currently in first place in the SWAC, and must also say first place in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll as well. 26-19 on the season. Your thoughts on the way your team has performed so far this year?
I think we've done well. You know, it started a little shaky in the beginning of the year. We were dealing with some injuries to some of our key arms or pitchers in the beginning of the year, but the guys were able to stick with the process and, you know, be able to step up in roles that maybe they weren't accustomed to early on in the year. But it seemed that once we got everybody full throttle, ready to go, just in time for the SWAC season, it's definitely turned the corner. So very pleased with all of our, you know, baseball guys in our program, and they're doing a really good job. And, you know, as we head into, like you mentioned, a big series against Alabama State. So overall, as long as we continue to keep everybody healthy and kind of keep the main thing, you know, just go 1-0 every day, not worry about anybody else. We control our own destiny. Just proud of the way the guys have handled the adversity so far this season.
You know, I got to take you back to last Wednesday, a big win over South Florida, who you lost to earlier in the year. You had the lead, lost it, came back, one with the walk-off, and we'll talk more about that. Just speak to that win, how big that win was, and then the resiliency of your team to – look, you had the lead, and then South Florida, and then you ultimately overcome and win that baseball game.
Yeah, that's – I mean, if you look back even before that, you know, Monday night we lose a heartbreaker at Jacksonville University where we had the lead and we got walked off. And then on Wednesday, you know, we had the lead, gave it up, and we were able to come back with a walk-off W. It just seems that the good thing about this team is just, you know, so what next pitch mentality. You know, we never let the highs get too high and the lows get too low. But just seeing how the group has come together the last couple of weeks has been awesome. You know, to see it grow organically, them playing for each other. It's not about one individual. It's about everyone together as a collective group to be able to come out with the outcome that we want. So, you know, you throw your individual accolades out the window. And I think that that day against South Florida, everything came fruition in that aspect of it. And it was a huge win, you know, for us. We've done a really good job the last couple of years of our midweek games. You know, our non-conference schedule, I'll put it up against anybody in the state of Florida because that's who we do play. Everyone here, and you know, this year was kind of up and down, but I think that our team has definitely turned the corner, and wins like that can only continue to motivate our team as we go on our quest to, you know, one day win the SWAC championship.
And it's interesting, and I want to talk a little bit more about that later on, because you're right there, semifinal defeat last year, but the year before that you lost in the finals. But I got to ask about the midweek deal, right? Because you've only lost four SWAC games. And the idea is to win the SWAC games, maybe more so, maybe. I mean, that's generally. You can tell me if I'm wrong. That's fine. Then the midweek games. And so you have to try to, you know, balance that, because I'm sure you want to, put some of your, you know, especially the arms, maybe against the midweek teams, knowing that they could have a good chance. However, the SWAC games are important. So how do you balance both of those, A, and then B, you know, speak to how you've played. You've won some non-conference games. You've won some midweek games this year.
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to be able to win on the weekends, right? The way how college baseball and the whole baseball landscape, we're a one-bid league. So we have to be able to win our conference tournament in order to advance to the field of 64 at the NCAA tournament at the end of the year. But I think that it also goes back to recruiting, right? Like you're going to be able to recruit, you know, 15 to 18 quality arms. It's not about quantity, right? And I think that's the biggest thing for us, is we want to have 15 to 18 quality arms that not only are they going to give us an opportunity to take care of business on the mound and SWAC conference weekends, but also have an opportunity to be able to compete in these midweek games. And, you know, if you ask anyone around our program, we don't shy away from that. You know, the expectation and the standard is to go out and compete, whether that's a Tuesday midweek against Florida, Florida State, Miami, UNF, Stetson, but also take care of business on the weekend in the SWAC conference. So I think when you put the schedule together, you know, when we do it as a staff, the midweek games, it's what's going to allow us to have our guys ready for down the road. You know, if we're able to put guys in certain situations that maybe they're not accustomed to, and, you know, they just have to be comfortable in an uncomfortable setting, because as we know, whoever is the champion, and if it is us at Bethune, you know, we're going to go to three regular, you know, three regional sites, Florida State, Miami, and Florida. So we have to put our, you know, student athletes in that position as much as possible to be able to compete in those environments. And the more often you put them in that environment, the more comfortable they would be. So, you know, it's great. The midweek games are awesome, but we can't lose focus of having to do what we need to do. You know, take care of business on the weekends when we enter SWAC play.
Jonathan Hernandez, he's in his sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman. He joins us here on Box to Row. The Wildcats are number one in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll, also number one in the SWAC, an important weekend series this weekend at home against Alabama State. I think what's interesting, you mentioned recruiting in building this program, because the first 3 years, Bethune-Cookman was in the MEAC, and maybe there were some tough times there. But then once COVID, and maybe the first year, then COVID hit. That's what happened. COVID hit in 20. You only played 18 games. 21, you didn't play a season. Then you go to the SWAC, and now you're starting to build this program up. As I mentioned last year, a semifinals finish in the SWAC tournament, a finals finish in 2023 in the SWAC tournament. Speak to recruiting and how you've been able to build this program in the last, specifically in the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster. You know, as you alluded to with the pandemic in my second year, only playing a handful of games, and, you know, also 21 opting out with the with us not playing, I was able to get back to the drawing board. You know, and at that point, our pitching coach had took a job, you know, closer to home, and it was myself and Coach Carballo. And at that point, it was more of the way how college baseball was going with everyone getting the extra year. We wanted to really attack the junior college recruiting. I have experience coaching in junior college for 5 years, and I thought that that was the best thing for our program at that given time in order to be able to stabilize the baseball program with all the rich history that the baseball program has had. It gave us an opportunity to really stabilize the program in 22 as we came back not only from 2 years without playing, but also leaving the MEAC and entering our first year in the SWAC. So recruiting is huge for us. You know, not necessarily are we going to target a lot of, you know, prospective student athletes in the transfer portal, because that's not something that, you know, we believe in. We'll get some guys here and there, but that's not the total makeup of our group. It's really, if you look at our roster, I want to say maybe 80 to about 85% of our roster is made up of those junior college student athletes. And I believe in the JUCO process. You know, you get guys that have experience. You have guys that appreciate the little things that you're able to do for them. Not to say that nobody else does, but the JUCO guy appreciates being able to fly 4 or 5 times a year as opposed to taking a 10 to 12 hour bus ride. You know, so there's just different makeup things that we look at when we identify, recruit, and evaluate, you know, the junior college baseball guys.
Of course, that's the voice of Jonathan Hernandez, the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman in his sixth season, as he joins us here on the program. You've got talent across the board. One guy in particular I want to ask you about, Andre Martinez, because in that game against South Florida, he had the walk-off double. He's got 14 home runs this season amongst the leaders in the SWAC. He's also slugging .733, which is 27th in all of Division I. Speak to how he's played this year.
That's another junior college guy that we talked about that we brought over from St. Pete Community College. You know, we're very thankful, you know, for him making the decision to come to Bethune-Cookman as he had different, you know, opportunities. But I think, you know, with Andre, the start of the season was very slow for him, and it took him some while, a while to adjust to Division I pitching and, you know, being able to be put in a comfortable setting where he's able to thrive. I think the biggest thing for Andre, too, is just his energy is infectious. You know, he comes to the ballpark with a smile on his face. He's the loud one in the dugout getting everybody up. And again, like, it just speaks to the work that he's been able to put in with our hitting coach, Coach Cartaya, to be able to have the success that he's been having. So the biggest thing for Andre is just continuing to stay consistent. You know, now, you know, he's a known commodity around college baseball, as you alluded to, with 14 home runs, you know, hitting 350, 360 on the year. He's going to have to adjust now to how the pitchers are going to pitch to him, because, again, he's not an unknown guy in our lineup. He is one of the key major parts in our starting lineup.
The pitching. I mean, if I look at your four guys with the top record, so each of these guys only has four losses. Between them, they have 22 victories and a bunch of strikeouts. How has the pitching been for you?
It's been awesome. You know, since day one, you know, for us, our philosophy with it starts and ends on the mound. You know, and like I mentioned to you, we wanted to recruit 15 to 18, you know, quality arms that are going to give us opportunities to compete day in and day out. You know, anchored by Tanner Bocabello, who's 7-1 on the year. You know, he's been awesome. He's another junior college transfer that we picked up from St. Pete 2 years ago. He was a preseason pitcher of the year, and, you know, he's done, you know, well for us. And then you have Joel Core, who's a Saturday starter, sophomore guy that we brought in as a freshman, and the experience that he was able to acquire last year as a freshman pitching in our midweeks has allowed him to have the success that he has now. And, you know, on Sundays we have Edwin Sanchez, who's a left-handed arm junior college product out of El Paso Community College. I think those three guys, that's probably the best starting pitching, you know, in the conference based on what the numbers say. And they just compete against each other day in and day out, man. It's a group that they're close-knit. You know, those guys, you know, if Boca goes out six, Cote wants to go 7 innings, and, you know, Sanchez wants to top that on Sunday. So when you have three quality starters on the weekend, you know, it's going to give you an opportunity to win a lot of ball games. And those three have certainly done that. And now our bullpen is full throttle with everyone healthy. And, you know, again, it starts and ends on the mound. I'm a big believer that you're not going to outslug your way to a championship. You're going to have to pitch. You're going to have to defend. And, you know, every one of our guys on the pitching staff has definitely stepped up this year. And we're excited about, you know, the last couple of weeks of the season.
And then Alabama State, thoughts on the Hornets? Always, always a tough game. Always, it's a great rivalry.
It is. It's a rivalry that kind of organically has come, you know, to fruition since we entered the SWAC. You know, Coach Vasquez and Coach Drew Clark, those are two Bethune-Cookman grads, two alums, and then those guys coached together here at Bethune when, you know, Bethune was on that crazy run of conference championships. I believe it was 10, 11 in a row. So, you know, there's a respect amongst the coaching staffs with Bethune and Alabama State, and they do a great job. I mean, those guys are ready to play day in and day out. And it seems that every time us and the Hornets get together, it's rivalry weekend, you know. And again, it's something that's happened organically. Ton of respect for the job that they do. And, you know, we're just looking for a great weekend of SWAC baseball as we host the Hornets. And then, you know, led by Juan Cruz. You know, Juan Cruz is a guy for them that does a lot of damage.
Jonathan Hernandez, again, sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, joining us here on Box to Row, the Wildcats number one in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll. Big weekend series at home against Alabama State. Coach Hernandez, always appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Wildcats.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Hail Wildcats.
It's an important weekend series for both Bethune-Cookman and Alabama State. You can react to anything that Jonathan Hernandez had to say. Hit us up via X at Box to Row, BoxToRow. Luka Talk is up next.
Listen up, guys. Are you experiencing any of the following? Fatigue, less drive, poor performance? If so, you may be one of the nearly 30 million men in the U.S. today dealing with ED. But did you know you don't have to pay hundreds for a prescription anymore? And you don't have to deal with the hassle of seeing the doctor or the embarrassment of going to the pharmacy for a certain pill. Now, with one free call, you can find out how Herbal Virility Max can help you feel like a man again. For over a decade, Herbal Virility Max has helped guys just like you put a smile back on their face with improved performance and drive. Call today and ask about our buy one, get one free offer.
Call 800-485-0821. 800-485-0821. 800-485-0821. That's 800-485-0821.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
Couple of more notes from the NFL draft before we talk about LeBron, Luka, and the Lakers. Also, Shedeur Sanders was pranked, right? The son of the Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator, Jeff Ulbrich. His son's name is Jax. Called Shedeur Sanders early in the process, pretending to be the Saints to say he was going to be drafted. And the NFL came down on the Falcons and on Jeff Ulbrich. $250,000 fine for the Atlanta Falcons from the league and $100,000 fine to Jeff Ulbrich. Now, Jax Ulbrich did apologize on social media. Jeff Ulbrich took responsibility for saying that, you know, his computer was out that had the numbers up and he should have, you know, been better about that. But come on. I mean, Jax Ulbrich is 21 years old and we all make mistakes. I mean, I was 21 at one time, made mistakes. But this is, I mean, Jax Ulbrich needs a spanking. That's what he needs, right? Like, why would you do that? And especially all that Shedeur Sanders was dealing with. Now, we did hear that other players, including Abdul Carter from Penn State, who was drafted by the Giants, got pranked too. But come on. I mean, we, you know, look, And I get it. Jeff Ulbrich is taking responsibility for his kid's action. But that was, that was really, really bad. And, probably the right thing from the league in terms of making sure, because you've got all these security, ultimate security when it comes to the NFL. And, you know, to leave it open, I mean, I get that. But come on, I mean, his son has got to be better than that. One last note. As I mentioned in the open, only this Carson Vinson was only the seventh player taken, seventh HBCU player taken in the National Football League draft in the last six drafts. It is ultimately and absolutely unacceptable because the teams draft who the teams draft. They scout who they scout. And that's what happens. I guess the problem that I have, it's not that if the guys aren't getting drafted, they're not getting drafted. But the problem is that the undrafted free agents are making rosters and in a lot of cases are making impacts on the teams. So it's like, okay, you don't draft them, but you can pick them up as free agents, and then they're going to make the team and make an impact anyway. So you're getting basically a bargain, much like we talked about Shedeur Sanders and the bargain, really, that the Browns got for him. Well, the same thing is happening with HBCU players. And Luke Williams of the Black College Sports page did has a tracker. And I don't know if the tracker has gone up, but he even mentioned the fact there was only one player that played at an HBCU, but was on an HBCU team at the time of the draft, and that was Carson Vinson. I mean, you got a couple of other guys, former HBCU guys. We know Travis Hunter, we know Shedeur Sanders, both played at Jackson State, were drafted. Bashal Tootin played his last 2 years at Virginia Tech, really wrecked shop after playing 2 years at A&T. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal. He got drafted. And also Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, who played at Alabama State, was drafted in the seventh round. He played lastly at Arizona. But, I mean, to the league, and I've written about this multiple times, like you can go back and read any of the other pieces that I've written over the last 6 years. Like, it's the same story. But, I mean, you have the NFL Combine. I realize the league is trying to do some things. I get all of that. But it's not trickling down to the clubs who continue not to draft players with talent. Because this is the thing. Like, HBCUs are part of a larger deal, if you will, with respect to smaller schools. So HBCUs are under the umbrella of smaller schools. But what makes HBCUs different than other smaller schools is that HBCU football is a thing, if you will. HBCU football is a thing. Everybody wants to be on the HBCU football bandwagon, right? Like, everybody now has, even some of these, some of the entities that are out here that cover college football really as a whole and cover some of the smaller entities. What do they also talk about and sometimes have a focus on? HBCU football. So, as we've already known, it's just come out a little bit more recently. And I guess it's a good thing, right? Like, you've got bandwagoners. It's cool to be on a bandwagon. I mean, heck, I was on the New York Knicks bandwagon. It's fine. It's cool to have bandwagoners, right? Because it helps to uplift HBCU football, right? But HBCU football, the difference is under the small school umbrella, HBCU football is a thing. Like, think about it. The only small schools, until more recently, and really, when you look at it from an ESPN perspective, that have their game shown on an ESPN channel. I'm not talking about ESPN3 or ESPN. Any of those things. I'm talking about on like U or 2 or even sometimes ABC. the SWAC, and the MEAC. Only two conferences that have that kind of relationship with ESPN, right? So you get your product out there a little bit more. HBCU football is a thing. Got it. It's got, you know, HBCU football players need to start being drafted. One this year, zero last year, seven in the last 6 years. Absolutely unacceptable. Let's move on. Luka. Okay, so Luka and LeBron. And after the Lakers lost 4-1 to Minnesota, LeBron comes out, much like he did last year. You know, his future's in doubt. We know LeBron's going to play. Still playing at a very high level. He'll be 41 when the season starts. And look, we know he's playing, or when the bulk of the season, I shouldn't say when the season starts, but the bulk of the season, he'll be 31, he'll be 41. And we know he's playing at a high level. I think a lot of us had to know, and I you know, this trade for Luka wasn't about this season. This is a long-term deal, and this is for the next 10 seasons, right? The problem is, you know, LeBron is coming out saying, you know, his future's uncertain, whatever. He's going to play next year. He's going to re-sign with the Lakers. He's going to get a boatload of money. It's going to be all good, right? But what I noticed in LeBron's press conference is he talked a lot about Anthony Davis. He spoke a lot about what it was like, and not to, he wasn't necessarily big upping or making it seem like, boy, I wish we hadn't made this trade. I'm not saying that. And he wasn't saying that. But I thought it was interesting that he mentioned Anthony Davis quite a few times and how the play of the Lakers was with Anthony Davis opposed to now with Luka Doncic. I mean, I would think the one thing would be that AD, you just couldn't, I mean, he was hurt a lot. Now, I know LeBron, even though he never said it publicly, I know he had to be thinking this dude sometimes, man, this dude is, I mean, gosh, you're hurt all the time or a lot of the time. But when AD was there and playing, he was spectacular. So we know LeBron's going to be back. The thing about Luka, and a lot has been made about him not being in shape and not being able to play D. And I don't, you know, a lot of times, I mean, you know, from a statistical standpoint, one of the stats that I thought was interesting, and a lot of times these stats are meaningless, but this one was meant something. In game 5, Luka had 16 guards. He guarded someone 16 times. 9 of those times, the player blew right past him for the points. That is unacceptable. Now, we could talk about Luka being in shape. He definitely needs to get in shape. He needs to take it a little bit more seriously. I know he looks up to LeBron. So I know, I know Luka's going to come back next year and his whole mindset is going to be different. It's why the Mavericks said they traded him. Okay. Still a bad trade, but this is why in part the Mavericks said they traded him, but it's still not going to make him a good defender. He can lose some pounds, be in better shape. He's still not going to be, he doesn't move well. You know what I mean? He's not going to be a good defender. And I thought J.J. Redick made some mistakes. He played his entire starting five in the second, or well, not the starting five, but he played 5 players in the second half of game 4 for the entire game. That was a mistake. It ended up being a mistake. Like, if it had worked out, we would have been having a different conversation, right? But look, Luka's not going to be better defensively. The Lakers are going to have to get better players, more bigs. They're going to have to get better for this thing to work out. But this is a 10-year deal, and Luka will win a championship while he's a Los Angeles Laker. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Jonathan Hernandez, the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, visit our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support Your Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.
You pinhead. See, when I was a youngster, used to wear them country broke kids. My mama made me do it, but the devil, he made me smart. Taught me to jack them weak suckers, but they hood is starters. In the middle school, I was a bigger fool. I wore a tank top to show off my tattoo, but it was cool. I used to hang out with my daddy's brothers. I call them my uncles. They taught me. I followed them when they ran numbers. So in essence, I was Rosemary's baby. And then I learned the difference between a brick and a...